Welcome to WCG Talks Trials, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of clinical research, sharing the latest trends, insights, and best practices from experts across the industry. In each episode of WCG Talks Trials, we'll explore a different area of the clinical trial industry while featuring a diverse range of clinical research and medical professionals. If you're passionate about advancing clinical research, improving patient outcomes, and driving healthcare forward, then WCG Talks Trials is the right podcast for you. We are so glad you could join us today.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kelly Fitzgerald, the Executive IRB Chair and Vice President of IBC Affairs at WCG, and I'm thrilled to be your host for today's episode on the topic of inclusion and technology in decentralized clinical trials. Before we dive in, let me remind you to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on your favorite listening platforms like Apple Podcasts and Spotify, so you never miss an episode of WCG Talks Trials. A decentralized clinical trial, or DCT, uses a combination of telehealth visits, personal technology, or non-traditional research sites to perform elements of the trial. During 2020, clinical research programs rapidly adopted decentralized models to ensure trials could continue during a global pandemic. This led to an increase in the use of these models, and while there has been some softening in this trend, we expect the percentage of trials with a decentralized component to increase in coming years. Often, decentralization requires technology of some kind. For example, electronic medical records to recruit participants, a tablet to deliver and record informed consent and administer patient-reported outcomes, or a wearable device to record physiologic data throughout the trial. Earlier this year, the DPICT Act was passed as part of an omnibus spending bill with the goal of improving diversity of clinical trial participants. The Act requires that investigational new drug and investigational device exemption applications address research participant representation. DCTs have been proposed as a way to improve diversity in clinical trials, and today we will be discussing the promise and challenges of decentralized trials' impact on diversity and inclusion. Today, I have a compelling panel of experts here with me to discuss how technology can affect clinical trial diversity and what sponsor sites and institutional review boards should be thinking about to ensure the best outcomes. Otis, can you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about how you are involved in this space?
Thank you, Kelly. Welcome to all our listeners tuning in. I am Otis Johnson, and it's a privilege to join you today on this insightful platform to discuss the vital intersection of inclusion and technology in clinical trials. With over two decades dedicated to advancing the pharmaceutical industry, my journey has been driven by a simple yet profound realization that the medicines we pour our heart and soul into must work not just for the faceless many, but for our loved ones and ourselves. This belief has propelled my career from the scientific labs at Merck & Company, where the seeds of my dedication to drug development were sown, through to the digital innovation halls of Syneos Health and ICON, and into the strategic leadership circles at Feisai, where AI not only stood for artificial intelligence, but aligned integrity with the needs of patients worldwide. Now, as the former Chief Diversity, Inclusion, and Sustainability Officer at Clario, I championed initiatives that earned the company national recognition and elevated its EcoVadis status. This role was more than a title to me. It was a commitment to ensure that when we speak of diversity, we don't just refer to the variety of molecules in a lab, but that rich tapestry of human lives that our work impacts. That the pharmaceutical industry has recognized our efforts with my inclusion in the PharmaVoice 100 list of most inspiring industry leaders and Mogul's acknowledgement as a top DEI leader is humbling. These are not just accolades, but reminders of the work still ahead. Currently, I serve on the advisory board of Wake Forest University's master's degree program in clinical research management and as a global advisory board member of the Healthcare Business Women's Association. My academic path from the University of Technology in Jamaica to the halls of Hunter College and New York University, culminating in a PhD from Walden University, has been the backbone of my professional endeavors. It has equipped me with the knowledge to lead, innovate, and most importantly, empathize with the myriad of patients we aim to serve. Now, as we embark on today's dialogue, my mission is clear: to harness the power of technology, not as a cold tool of science, but as a warm embrace of inclusivity. ensuring that the trials we design and the therapies we develop leave no one behind.
Thank you so much, Otis. And we also have Archana Shah. Archana, can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you, Kelly. It's a privilege to be part of this panel and share my thoughts and perspectives on this very near and dear topic of technology and inclusivity. So I have been a clinical development leader for the past 30 years in the industry and have been incredibly fortunate to have been able to bring 15 drug approvals to the market, 12 of those, especially in the oncology space, both in solid tumors as well as liquid tumors or blood cancers, and also in rare diseases. I've held various global positions throughout my career in biotech, big pharma, CROs, as well as a technology, a healthcare technology company. I spent some time at Johnson & Johnson, Bayer Oncology, Genentech Roche, Icon Clinical Research, and a couple of oncology biotech startup companies. And most lately, I was the SVP and head of oncology solutions at Medable, a leading technology platform provider across the clinical trial ecosystem. Now I have an independent strategy consultant company of my own, and I serve as board advisor as well as an advisor to various CEOs and their executive teams and different organizations on leveraging innovative tools to modernize the way we do clinical trials. How do we leverage technology and as well as a deep understanding of the clinical development and clinical operations process to bring efficiencies, to bring diversity, and to bring access across the entire healthcare ecosystem. While at Genentech Roche, where I spent some time as their therapeutic area leader for oncology, I was incredibly fortunate to also have laid the seeds for inclusivity research while taking part in the global innovation in that area. And some of the work that we did under those initiatives, we were amongst the first forerunners or frontrunners to think about what impact, you know, to understand, first of all, what sort of diversity exists in clinical trials or lack thereof, and how do we take that fundamental understanding to apply to increase diversity and inclusivity in all of our clinical trials across the board. And it's that work that I've also continued to work on and take on to when I moved on to a technology company as well, to help design products that are thinking about all the various challenges and the needs across the board to reach the patients where they actually reside in the community setting. Or in, you know, how do we build trust levels within the local areas or zip codes that we are trying to take the patient to? So those have been really instrumental in why this topic is near and dear to me. I've been honored to be one of the top 20 women in immuno-oncology drug development and also being featured in Pharma Features on Oncology and Drug Development and Digital Health Technology. Some of the papers we have published this year along with Dyme, especially in the area of oncology and incorporation of technology in that area, have been widely well received. So I'm incredibly fortunate to join this esteemed panel and bring my thoughts and expertise in this area. And I look forward to our discussion today.
Thank you so much. And Ken McKinn, can you please give us a little bit of background about you?
Yes, thanks, Kelly. And again, I'm also privileged to be part of this panel today. So I am a physician board member at WCG, and my background, I am trained in pediatrics and specifically child abuse pediatrics, and that was my clinical career. And I've always had, ever since medical school and before medical school, an interest in the social determinants of health and how someone's social environment really does impact their health and well-being. And it also applies to the ability to participate in clinical research. And as an IRB member evaluating protocols, really got me thinking about the issues of justice. And my concern was and is, you know, what data is not being captured? So really looking at health data poverty and how can we better include with these digital platforms, better include populations that may be out of the scope of what is currently occurring in clinical research. So I see this as a great opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So we'll get started in our discussion about decentralized trials. So in what ways can decentralized trials improve diversity in clinical trials? Let's start with Otis.
Sure. So I have high hopes for decentralized clinical trials because they present a transformative opportunity to address the diversity gap in clinical research. I'll just touch on a few reasons why I have such high hopes. So traditional clinical trials often require participants to frequently visit specific clinical sites, which can be a barrier for those living in remote areas. DCTs eliminate the geographical constraint, enabling people from diverse regions, including rural areas, to participate. Just think of a busy mom. She prepares breakfast for her kids. She drops them off at school. She goes to work, and then she may have to pick them up, finish work, prepare dinner for them, help them with their homework, and then put them to bed. Tell me, where in that schedule do you see time for clinical trials? Some individuals may have difficulty adhering to strict trial schedules due to work commitments, family responsibilities, or cultural practices. The flexibility inherent in DCTs, such as remote check-ins from data submission, can make participation more feasible for these individuals. DCTs can potentially reach underserved and marginalized populations, such as the elderly, those with mobility issues, or individuals in low-resource settings. By eliminating the need for these in-person visits, we're reducing logistical barriers and often prevent these groups from participating. And then I'll touch on socioeconomic barriers just for a second. The indirect costs associated with traditional trials, things like transportation, missed work, especially for those who work hourly, or childcare, can deter participation, especially among lower income populations. Decentralized methods can help mitigate some of these costs. So technology and decentralization are not panaceas, but they significantly expand the reach and accessibility of clinical trials. If implemented thoughtfully, DCTs have the potential to make clinical research more representative and equitable. So in other words, DCTs have the potential to be a game changer.
Thank you. Archana, what do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, Otis really did a good job giving that really comprehensive list of benefits. I would just add a couple of more things to that you know, and start off with reminding our audience that there was a publication in August of 2021 in Cancer Discovery, and it was actually a joint publication put out with industry leaders, FDA, and other regulatory body leaders, as well as health tech providers who developed these DCT solutions jointly. So it was a joint publication. And what was remarkable about that there were very solid recommendations put out, like making consents permanent, adding electronic patient-reported outcomes, telehealth routines, you know, that help increase the use of community-based network sites as opposed to just, you know, large academic clinical trial sites that is typically used by pharma and biotech. They also advocated for use of direct-to-patient home delivery of oral drugs and concomitant medications and reporting via digital tools through the use of these decentralized trial technologies. The underpinning word that comes to my mind was access. I really see that using these DCT technologies, one of the biggest benefits is providing access to the underserved and the rural populations. You know, people that that do not have ability to travel to these clinical trial sites or to have, depending on socioeconomic determinants of health, do not have the means to participate in these technology-laden trials, for example, where there's an opportunity for us to bring the trial to where they reside in their community setting. So for me, one of the biggest benefits that come to my mind is access. How do we ensure that all these fantastic innovations that are coming out of our industry to improve patient lives are actually reaching the global population, the rural population, the community setting? So I'm talking not just the United States, but globally. You know, that is, I believe, is not only the right thing to do, but is also imperative. COVID was very, a stark eye-opener that brought forth the disparities and the impact of these disparities and impact of these innovations not reaching all the communities that led to significant larger number of deaths in certain patient populations that did not have access to these health innovations. So I believe that bringing access through these technologies, through these solutions, and making it easier for the patients by reducing the burden that Otis mentioned, but also from a site's perspective, from a clinic perspective, how do we leverage technology such that it fits into their workflow, how they treat patients and see patients, that plays a huge role and really truly impacts how these technologies are deployed and adopted in order to bring that access that I mentioned earlier, that's really, really important. So from a sponsor's perspective, having spent, many, many, many years, 3 decades in that area, I really feel that it really behooves the sponsors to leverage a lot of these tools and take on the benefits right from the protocol design phase, where they're able to expand their enrollment, accelerate their data collection, do real-time patient monitoring to manage the tolerability of the therapeutics that their patients are going through. And at the end of the day, provide access to not just the medications during a clinical trial, but also post-approval access of those medications leveraging a lot of these technologies. And, drug development is a complex business. We often talk about patient centricity, and it's front and foremost in the minds of all the leaders working in this area. And I say, what better way to do this drug development with patient centricity in mind than to use this technology? But it has to be in a very fit for purpose approach, which I'm sure we'll touch upon later on in this discussion. But I really feel from a sponsor's perspective as well, it really helps them bring acceleration and turbocharge their enrollment and make it faster, bring diversity in their enrollment numbers, which is what is required from a regulatory perspective of the DPICT Act as well. And most importantly, bring access to a lot of these solutions to the patients for which they're developing these innovative medicines.
Thank you. So we heard a lot about the promise of technology in clinical trials. Let's talk about some of the challenges. Ken, what are some of the issues that have been raised in IRB meetings when you've involved in discussions with this?
Sure. So in the IRB meetings, I mean, we certainly realize, things are getting better and technology is improving. I would say, one thing is from an IRB perspective, we see the research protocol after it's been designed and the inclusion and exclusion criteria has been put together. So that can sometimes make, giving meaningful feedback challenging. But some of the things that we may see And we're really looking at the inclusion and exclusion criteria would be, again, you know, Trana had mentioned access. And it's not just the, you know, the access to technology, but to, you know, quality technology and sort of BYOD and bringing your own device. And do these populations have, you know, that sort of access to something that is of quality that it can be used in the study? You know, we had talked about rural populations. And if you live in a rural state, as I do, I think it's wonderful. I'm a big proponent of DCTs and getting out into rural communities. But, you know, we also have to realize that, you know, there's broadband and reliable internet issues. And it's improving. It's definitely improving, but it's still there. Do they have access to the quality internet that's needed for that sort of continuous monitoring? Digital literacy is often an inclusion or exclusion criteria. You know, do people have the skills that they need to be able to use this technology, as well as physical accessibility? So, for example, in IRB meetings, it may be that those with impaired vision are excluded from the trial because they won't be able to see their cell phone screen. And again, that's sort of that access concern that we see. And then language barriers. And it's not uncommon that participants must be English speaking in order to be enrolled into the study. And we know with that, then we're, you know, excluding certain populations. So not to be a downer or anything like that, but I think, you know, these are some of the issues that as an IRB, we run across when we are reviewing DCTs.
Thanks, Ken. Otis, what are some of the primary risks that you see with increasing use of technology and its impact on diversity?
Well, Ken said something that really raised an alarm bell for me. And I was thinking, rather than exclude based on digital literacy, why not challenge technology companies to make technology that are more accessible so that we don't have to exclude? That really bothers me. So while technology holds immense potential to enhance diversity, it's essential to recognize that it can inadvertently introduce biases and create barriers. So I just want to touch on a few of these potential areas of concern. So in our increasingly connected world, a significant digital divide exists. Many people, especially in underserved regions or among older age groups, may not have consistent access to high-speed internet or advanced devices. This can inadvertently exclude these groups from participating in clinical trials and in DCT trials as well. So we talk a lot about bring your own device studies, BYOD studies. Those are great, but we should always include the flexibility to provide devices to those who don't have a smartphone with the minimum requirements. And if we look at bias and wearables, which are increasingly being used in clinical trials as well, it's crucial to ensure that the wearable devices used in DCTs have been validated across diverse populations. Some devices might have inherent biases in their measurements based on skin tone, age, or other factors. We learned a tough lesson during COVID when a subset of people were put on oxygen too late because of poorly developed pulse oximeters. And I'm saying poorly developed, meaning that there wasn't diverse representation when those devices were being developed. And that's what led to those kind of unfavorable outcomes. Now, different communities have varying perceptions and concerns about data privacy. And if these aren't addressed adequately, certain groups might be hesitant to participate due to mistrust or fear of misuse of their data. So those have to be accounted for, those privacy concerns. There could also be an over-reliance on algorithms. Using algorithms for patient recruitment or data analysis, for example, can introduce biases if they are based on historically skewed data sets. For instance, if an AI model is trained on predominantly one demographic, it might unintentionally favor or exclude certain groups. So we have to be careful about those AI algorithms and intentionally look for biases.
Thanks, Otis. So we kind of moved into discussion about technology development and where we should focus efforts. Archana, what are the top two issues you think technology developers should prioritize?
Yeah. You know, having spent some time at a technology provider and after having spent several years on the pharma side, on the sponsor side, it really gave me an opportunity to kind of see both sides of the table. And I really feel, you know, what my key takeaways from those experiences were that the technology providers really need to develop high quality software with the patient journey in mind, with, you know, understanding what does a typical patient pathway look like for that disease or for that, you know, typical therapeutic areas. Also develop a deep understanding and of what does a typical site workflow look like? You know, how does the endpoint data flow or data collection take place? You know, and more importantly, they should be all along building flexibility into the software, as each site may be different, and giving sites a cookie cutter solution where and expecting them to utilize them in addition to all the other mandated, you know, different study specific technology really creates an unbearable end user burden. So tech developers should really be focusing on easy to use technology with all of these three different journeys in mind: the patient journey, the workflow at the site, and the diversity of the workflow, the flexibility depending on, you know, the kind of site that is going to be using the technology. And they should also ensure that the caregiver access and user experience needs are met by the softwares. I bring up caregiver because it is, you know, oftentimes a lot of the chronic disease patients and also oncology patients, for example, they are oftentimes assisting very closely the patients in using these technologies that are being deployed, either for remote patient monitoring, you know, whether the wearables or the tablet or the watches, or even in a BYOD setting that Otis mentioned, the caregiver plays a critical role in, you know, helping the patient navigate their treatment journey. So I've often seen software developers, you know, go all the way, you know, a few years into the development process, but not have actually thought about and built the caregiver needs right from day one. So that would be my another advice to the technology developers, you know. Most importantly, ensure interoperability for multi-solutions as opposed to developing silo solutions. I think our industry is plagued with this problem. There are a lot of these tech developers that are developing these point solutions that may not necessarily be interoperable with a site workflow and other systems that are being used at the site level. And that leads to a severe lack of adoption, and hence lack of all the benefits that we have just talked about. They never reach the patients, or it becomes more burdensome. The technology becomes a burdensome solution, a huge burdensome solution for sites, and thereby do not actually reach the patients that they were intended for, or are difficult to use. And hence, you know, imagine having to remember 40 different logins and passwords at a site for a site coordinator to manage so many technologies being thrown at them by sponsors that they're working up with. So that would be another advice I would have. And lastly, ensuring the patient privacy concerns that Otis also touched upon is very, very important, and transparency provided to patients regarding this in the informed consents, regarding how their data is being captured, what is being captured, and the privacy, addressing the privacy concerns in a very transparent manner. I would be amiss if I did not bring up providing site training to use the technology, because, you know, several surveys from the Society for Clinical Research Sites have shown us that sites on average are, you know, 2 years ago, they were spending 17 hours per trial just training on all this multitude of technology that was thrown at them by the sponsors on studies. And that time is not accounted for, by the way. They were not paid for those extra time deployed. They ended up being the IT support for patients. So my really sincere advice to these technical developers would be, make sure you have providing site training for use of the technology built in into your deployment strategy, as well as ensuring 24/7 tech support available for patients to troubleshoot any tech issues like logins or entering data, et cetera. That is so very critical. I couldn't emphasize that more. I mean, it is a very simple thing, but it is a very important thing in order to ensure the adoption and the support the sites need and the patients need in order for us to really leverage the advantages of technology and inclusivity and access to all the patients. And really, when these technology providers are developing different algorithms, it is really important to make sure that it caters to the different diverse, it has been validated in diverse patient populations, as Otis mentioned as well. A lot of the variables and sensors that I see today in the market, they're not necessarily validated for that diversity. And then we really, ideally, I would love to see some global guidelines for harmonization of standards, both from algorithm development perspective, but also from validation perspective. You know, it's that it is applicable to a diverse patient population from usability as well. So I think a lot of the biases that exist could be taken care of through these technology solutions. So I would really, these would be my advice for the tech developers.
Thank you. So we've talked a little bit about advice for tech developers, and Ken mentioned that the IRB is somewhat at the end of this process and doesn't have a lot of control over how studies are designed. And that's really a responsibility of the sponsor. So Otis, can you talk a little bit about sponsors, where they should focus when they're working on developing decentralized trials with technology?
Yeah, absolutely. But allow me to comment briefly on the outline that Archana gave. I think it's comprehensive, and it covers a lot of the areas that developers need to think about. In one of my prior roles, I was actually responsible for product development and noted that one of the steps that's often skipped is really having that diverse group of testers, and those need to be the intended end users. You are bound to make a mistake if you don't have the product tested by a diverse group of intended users. And really, if you have a good technology, you should not need to consult a user manual to use it. So I think that's a lens that technology developers should look at product development through. Now, in terms of sponsors, I think continuous training and support is going to be key because as technology evolves, sponsors should prioritize continuous training for both their teams and the trial participants who will be using the tech. And this ensures that everyone is comfortable with the tools being used and can leverage them effectively. Since the sites are the primary interface with participants, sponsors should also ensure that site staff have received some kind of clinical trial diversity training. And that brings me to diversity and inclusion, because you can't really think about clinical trial technology and not think about diversity and inclusion. And sponsors should focus on ensuring that their trials are designed to be as inclusive as possible. That's where it starts. If the study design is not inclusive, it doesn't matter what types of steps that you take during the recruitment process, your trial is not going to be diverse. So that's a key responsibility that sponsors have, to set that tone initially with a diverse and inclusive protocol. I'll just tell a quick story, and it's one that I picked up at a conference I attended some time ago. And there was a Black physician on a panel, and she told the story about being invited to participate in a clinical trial as a primary investigator. And one of the requirements in the trial is that medication that the participants need to stay on during the course of the trial, the protocol assumed that it would be covered by health insurance. Now, she was shocked at the naivety of that assumption, because in the area where her site is, most of the potential participants there were not insured. And for those who were insured, they were underinsured, and that drug would not be covered. Now, that type of approach to protocol design excluded not only the people around that site, but in several other communities like that. So the challenge also the sponsors is to have a diverse team working at the sponsor. Diversity does not just apply to the sites. It applies to all aspects of the clinical trial ecosystems, including at the sponsors, at the CROs, at the technology and service companies. Because if you had a diverse team involved in that protocol design example, someone may have flagged that assumption as a barrier to recruiting a diverse and inclusive trial.
I could build on that, Kelly. Incorporating these technology, as Otis mentioned, right, at the protocol design phase, but also laying out the patient pathway and from the sponsors, when you put together your schedule of events and calculate the protocol complexity score along with the patient burden scores, you know, there are actual formulas you can actually do this for each protocol. It's really important because it helps you see how burdensome and how complex your protocol is going to be in the real world when you go to execute the trial. And how burdensome those visits are going to be for the patients. So I always advise sponsors to deploy technology in a fit-for-purpose approach with the flexibility provided to patients, because some patients might want to do televisits for some of the visits, while others may want to come in every time during, you know, to the site to, as you know, depending on their preference and personal preference as well. Admittedly, this brings more complexity from a deployment and execution perspective, but I think it is worth it for that complexity. And we, as a clinical trial industry professionals, we should be ready to take on that challenge and provide it to and bring and be able to build a solution within our protocol design to give that flexibility to meet the patient diverse needs. I really feel that taking the input from the sites, you know, large hospitals versus community clinics versus network sites, and don't forget global sites, because not a lot of the sites may have the infrastructure for deployment of these technologies that the US-based sites may have. So seeking out input during the design phase from diverse group of sites on how the tech would be deployed locally and how it would fit into their workflow. What are the language or translation needs globally? What are the regulatory requirements as, you know, for BYOD or provision devices needs? And of course, what is mentioned, training and ongoing tech support. These should be factored in during the design phase. And seeking input from patients, again, both US-based as well as global. I say that because a lot of the trials are global trials in today's day and age, listed on clinicaltrials.gov. And ultimately, the goal of any pharma manufacturer is to sell their medications and innovations globally. So seeking input from patients that may bring in some cultural aspects of technology usage or social determinants of health aspects of technology availability, et cetera, would be very beneficial for the sponsor to factor that. And, you know, don't force only one kind of siloed tech technology for each study to the sites. I would say to sponsors, be open-minded and allow sites to invest in silo in like some of the basic technologies like e-consent, telehealth, home health nurses, even, you know, technology for medication shipping for, you know, as well as for medication adherence, for example, and let them deploy their technology on your trials. That's why I say that interoperability is so important for the way these technology develop their technology, because if they don't have this feature, we cannot, you know, sponsors then become very silo-minded and are not open-minded to allow sites to invent their own technology, and incorporating the patient feedback on the tech usability, as Otis said. So for me, these would be some of the additional suggestions I would have for sponsors to make this a better success for them.
Okay, great. And you touched on some site-level issues. So what advice would you have for sites? What is their role here in improving technology and how it's used to diversify clinical trials?
Yeah, so I think, as I said, I look at sites as a key center stakeholder in a deployment of technology, to leveraging of technology, to reduce their burden, to help with the complexity of the trials that are coming their way when they're executing them, and also to incorporate them in the workflow. So my advice to sites would be that take the time during your feasibility, when you get approached for feasibility, take the time to truly understand what sort of technology, ask the right questions, right? During feasibility, what sort of technologies would be deployed on the protocol? And, you know, ask for that information and understand the entire workflow of your site and how those technologies will fit in within your workflow. And that could vary for a site at a large academic setting versus a community site versus a site in Africa versus a site in Latin America or Asia. So ask the right questions right in the beginning, get a good understanding during the feasibility phase itself, and invest in some technology would be my other advice so that they are, you know, they invest in technology as well as invest in understanding and training yourself and your staff on diversity and inclusion. Because if you don't have that understanding, you won't understand, you won't be able to then ask the right questions to the sponsor when you're working with them and they're pushing technology at you, and which is increasing your burden. So my advice to them would be, you know, look, develop that collaborative relationship with the sponsors and the tech providers. Be that center spoke of the wheel where you are an enabler. You are partnering with them. You are, you know, building that trust relationship of voicing the concerns and bringing the challenges you're facing, and then working with them to find solutions, to implement solutions, so that ultimately these trials do reach the patients that it was intended for. Make sure your staff is trained on both sides of the technology as well as diversity, and leverage some of the data that you have. To be honest, you know, you are in this business of enrollment of patients. You are sitting on tons of data and you know your community best. Leverage the relationships you have built with your community of trust as well as access to bring them into the fold of more participation into the clinical trials, more patients. You know, we have to move the needle from the 5 to 8%. We keep hovering around depending on the indication. We need to move that needle further such that clinical trials can become a care option. Investigators, you know, I keep shouting from the rooftops all the time, we need to be educating the investigators and the physicians equally on technology as well as diversity and inclusion in their practices, in, you know, how they can. They may not, you know, DCT guidance from the FDA that came out earlier this year and is soon to be finalized is has made it clear you do not have to be a full-fledged site to be deploying a lot of these technologies. You could be assisting the main sites by acting as a local resource for routine vital signs or routine medication pickup or routine checkups. And by just being a healthcare professional, the HCP definition that is in the FDA guidance. So I say that it is equally important for sites investigators to come along on this journey and educate yourself, be the partner that we see you as in this ecosystem to help bring access to these patients. The bias that exists in terms of, you know, take the time to talk to your patients and offer clinical trials as a treatment option. You know, these would be some of my other advice to the sites. You know, we are all in this for the patients. I know that the sites, that is their mission at the core of their heart. And it's, you know, let's bring them along. You need to come along on this journey with us.
Thank you. Otis, did you have any advice to add for sites and what they can do to enhance use of this technology for diversity?
Absolutely. There is no question that sites play a pivotal role in the successful execution and management of a clinical trial. And their importance remains even in the context of decentralized trials and technology integration. Of all the roles involved in delivering a clinical trial, the site is the closest and possibly the most trusted, and I mean closest to the patient. Sites often have a direct and established relationship with patients. They're usually the first point of contact and are entrusted with explaining the trial's processes, ensuring understanding, and obtaining informed consent. With the introduction of technology, sites can help bridge and any apprehension patients have, providing assurance and guidance on the use of those tech tools. Even with decentralized trials, there might be instances where direct physical data collection or certain interventions are necessary. Sites ensure that these processes adhere to the trial's protocols and maintain the data's integrity and accuracy. Now, sites can serve as the on-the-ground hubs for deploying technology tools, whether it's handing out wearable devices, guiding patients on the use of an app, or troubleshooting any tech issues they may face. Now, an often overlooked role that sites can play, especially for tech companies and sponsors, is that sites can be instrumental in gathering real-time feedback from patients about their experiences with the technology. This feedback can be invaluable for sponsors and tech developers, helping them make iterative improvements. That's a very important and often overlooked value that sites bring to the introduction of new tech. Now, sites can also monitor and ensure that patients are complying with the trial's requirements, especially in terms of using the provided technology. They can address any challenges patients face, ensuring that data collection is consistent and reliable. They also perform a role of being that cultural and linguistic mediator. So in regions where linguistic and cultural diversities exist, sites play a crucial role in translating and mediating the technology use, ensuring that it aligns with local customs, values, and language nuisance as well. And then, very importantly, emergency response. If a patient faces any adverse reactions or emergencies, the site is often the first responder, providing immediate care and intervention. This remains essential even with the most advanced tech tools in place. So although technology is reshaping the landscape of clinical trials, the human touch, the expertise, and infrastructure that sites provide remain irreplaceable. They act as the anchors, ensuring that the trial's technological and human elements harmoniously coexist to achieve the desired outcomes. So sites are essential for DCT deployment as well. They shouldn't be seen as competition for DCT, but rather as a conduit for facilitating the adoption.
Thanks, Otis. So as we think about making real improvements in enrolling diverse populations, we need to think about populations who might have physical challenges, who need support, also thinking of adults with cognitive challenges and children who need a caregiver to respond on their behalf and maybe interact with the technology. Karen, as an IRB member, where do you feel technology can be supportive in these cases?
Well, I think I'm just going to really piggyback on what Archana and Otis have said. I've been over here just quietly fist pumping the whole time with their comments. Definitely, I think implementing user experience or UX design early on in the design process, as Otis and Archana have spoken about, and incorporating technology expertise and experts with knowledge of study design and scientific merit, again, early on. We know it's one thing, as we're talking about populations that may have challenges or need extra support, you know, it's one thing to enroll someone into a study, but it might be another for someone to remain in the study and to be able to complete the study. And so considering the caregivers, you know, if your study includes pediatrics or adults lacking capacity, is this study design potentially burdensome? So, you know, just because we can get multiple data points, should we be getting multiple data points? So think about, you know, are there multiple surveys, diary entries per day, entering AM, PM blood pressure readings, food diaries, et cetera, or as we had mentioned, you know, multiple devices. And that may be too much for an already overwhelmed caregiver. But with technology, we might be able to take those steps and those procedures and have many of those be automated or batched. Or, you know, when we talk about, you know, broadband and internet, can the software work in airplane mode? You know, is it able to do that? And then batch uploading when there is a clinic visit, voice recognition, speech options, and, you know, we had Otis had mentioned support, you know, can, and Archana had mentioned support, can technical support be built into the software to help for these populations that are already meeting challenges? And from an IRB perspective, I would say, you know, we're not really aware of what other features might be available unless we see it in the packet that comes to us. So it's helpful for designers and sponsors to include information about supportive designs, features to help with inclusion, and put that information in the study protocols or the device manuals so that IRBs can be made aware of them.
Thanks, Ken. Archana, what are some concerns sponsors have when using technology in trials with these populations?
Yeah, you know, depending on the therapeutic area, you could really be looking at a wide range of patient populations that sponsors are dealing with, you know, in to enroll in their trials. It's interesting. I had recently read a report, I don't remember whether it was a research paper or a report, where in the elderly population, you know, let me just give that as an example, between 40 to 65, they had seen, higher participation in clinical trials than 65 and over, especially if the patients were not inflicted with those kinds of diseases. They were lesser, you know, lesser desire to participate in a much higher patient population, which was puzzling to me, you know, because 65 and higher, you would think they would maybe, you know, nearing retirement or closer to it, or at least you would see a smaller bump there in terms of being able to have the time to participate in clinical trials, you know. And I'm not talking, you know, oncology kind of, you know, where it, when clinical trials are oftentimes not a matter of choice, but a matter of necessity for survival for them. But in some of the other chronic diseases areas, that was a little bit puzzling to me. So when the sponsors are building, you know, optionality for patients, I think in addition to catering to, you know, the physical and cognitive challenges that may have a wide spectrum, again, depending on the protocol target population, ensuring, you know, sponsors also worry about some of the translation, you know, the concerns they have in deploying. It gets very expensive, and you have to have a technology that is deployable in 100 different languages across the world, right, when they have a global trial. So it really is important that vendors that are developing these kind of solutions are catering to the needs of the wide age range of the patient population, you know, pediatric patients all the way through adult patients and older patients, but also ensuring that the way the data flow is happening, because remember, for the sponsor, the most important currency is the data that they're collecting through these technologies, and that is often linked to their primary and secondary endpoints. So one of the key things for the sponsors is making sure that they don't have missing data, that patients are not dropping off, you know, because the patient, you know, the technology is becoming too burdensome for them, especially in long-term follow-up times, et cetera. These factors really play a big role in ensuring the high-quality data collection, ensuring complete data collection, and making sure that the usability of the software, that is the interface for both the patient and the caregivers, as well as for the sites, let's not forget them. These are all some of the things that sponsors have to be concerned about and make sure that that is all, you know, at the end of the day, the data that is collected is of high quality and value to be submitted for regulatory authorizations.
Otis, are there any other populations where technology development could be a game changer?
Yes. So when we consider the vast diversity of potential clinical trial participants, it's essential to account for a wide range of needs and challenges. You've rightly highlighted physically challenged individuals, adults with cognitive challenges, and children who rely on caregivers. But there are other populations where thoughtful technology development could be transformative. Acharna, you just spoke a lot about children and the elderly, so I'll just mention a few quick ones. So starting with hearing and visually impaired individuals. These groups have often been inadvertently excluded from many clinical trials due to the lack of accessible tools. Technology can be leveraged to create platforms and devices specifically tailored to their needs. And I know you spoke about this as well, Ken. For instance, voice-assisted tools for visually impaired or subtitles and sign language integration for the hearing impaired can be instrumental. And some of these are not that difficult to implement in the tech that we use. And then patients with conditions like chronic pain, fatigue, or other debilitating symptoms might find regular visits to trial sites burdensome. So this is where wearable technology can monitor and record data in real time from the comfort of their homes and drastically improve their participation rates. Now, we also need to think about culturally diverse populations, which we have been speaking about here. But beyond language, cultural nuances and beliefs can influence a person's decision to participate in a clinical trial. Virtual reality or augmented reality tools that provide culturally contextual experience for the trial can make potential participants more comfortable with the process, and this can be beneficial. So it's just another thing to think about. We already talked about making accommodations for rural and remote populations as well. So the last thing I'll say on this is that the beauty of technology lies in its potential to be molded and adapted to fit a plethora of needs. The key is to approach its development with a lens of inclusivity, ensuring that no group is left behind merely because of technological barriers.
Thank you. So we're sort of reaching the end of our conversation today. It's been wonderful talking to all of you. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on this. So let's just go around and spend about a minute each on your final thoughts on summarizing how technology use in clinical trials impacts diversity. So Ken, start us off, please.
Sure. So it may seem like, what we're looking at is quite a bit, and it is, and can feel overwhelming. So I would say consider incremental changes with each new protocol. So when you're designing a DCT's protocol inclusion and exclusion criteria, where, especially at the exclusion criteria, where's the low-hanging fruit that can be modified so a few more groups are able to participate and complete the next study, and then rinse and repeat for the next study and the one after that and the one after that and so on.
Archana.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's, the word is really fit for purpose, technology deployment, interoperability, harmonization of regulatory policies and guidelines globally with respect to technology deployments, and providing optionality, in each study for diverse patient population, so that you're reaching and bringing this innovation to even more patients and their needs within the community setting. I would also add that sites, the sort of physicians and their staff, they are most important stakeholders, as we have talked today, for widespread adoption of these technologies. So making sure that the sponsors and the tech providers, they are collaborating with them very closely, as from a user interface, adoptability, diverse needs, cultural needs, and incorporating education, training and education and tech support throughout the process with them. I believe there's a lot of potential in leveraging AI ML tools to reduce the administrative data entry burden from the site side, so they can really focus on the patient monitoring and the patient care, which is really their focus and something that they are the key stakeholders for, that leads to better patient outcomes. And from a sponsor's perspective, that helps them provide access to more patients globally, worldwide. It is, you know, there is a myth out there that, oh, technology slows us down. It is very expensive. And I want to today dispel some of that. I hope your audience listening to this podcast would agree that some of those myths have been busted today throughout our conversation. It is really the fit for purpose approach. And I also want to end with a thought that I believe it is also an imperative and ethical approach that is needed for us. All rising tide raises all boats. We need to bring these innovations to all and inclusive patients globally. And if we are not open to deploying these technologies in a very fit for purpose approach, starting small, as Ken said, and building on top of that, we won't be successful in that mission. So it behooves us to be leveraging these technologies, being very mindful where they can become a barrier as opposed to aid, and making sure that we are building the flexibility for the wider patient target population that we are reaching through these trials. So I'll pause there. And, you know, I am one of those who is a strong believer in the positives, especially with the latest generative AI technology and advantages. You know, translations, for example, could the issue of translations not being available could be immediately eradicated if we were to be deploying some of these, for example, in the right way to make these trials accessible to even more patients. That's just one small example, but I'm a strong believer in leveraging technology to improve inclusivity and decentralized clinical trials. And, you know, there's a recent survey, 80% of trials are projected to have at least one DCT element in them over the next 10 years or more. So it is going to be a must get on with it area, as opposed to let's stay away from it, or oh, it's too complex and not, you know, like how can we survive without it? So I would, you know, my advice to sponsors, to sites, to tech developers, and to patients as well would be let's get on with it, let's become comfortable with it, and let's leverage it in the right manner for each of those stakeholders, such that it is ultimately bringing access to the patients.
Wonderful. Thank you. Otis, any final thoughts?
Thanks again for the opportunity to participate in this important episode, Kelly. Technology's infusion into clinical trials is akin to opening a door to a world brimming with possibilities. As we've discussed today, when wielded with foresight, empathy, and a genuine commitment to inclusivity, technology can become the great equalizer, bridging divides of geography, language, physical capability, and more. It has the potential to render borders obsolete, ensuring that a trial conducted in one part of the world resonates in its significance across continents. However, we must tread with caution. With every stride we take in the technological realm, we must pause, reflect, and ask, who might we be leaving behind? Technology, though a formidable tool, is only as powerful as the hands that shape it and the minds that deploy it. As stakeholders in this vast ecosystem, our responsibility is dual-faceted. First, to incessantly innovate, ensuring that our technological solutions are at the vanguard of what's possible. And second, to ground these innovations in the bedrock of ethical principles, ensuring that we champion the cause of every individual, irrespective of language, culture, physical, or cognitive abilities. I challenge our listeners to envision a future where technology isn't just a tool, but an ally that amplifies our intent, widens our reach, and ensure that in the pursuit of medical advancements, no voice remains unheard, no story untold, to a brighter, more inclusive tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Ken, Arjuna, Otis, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you to our listeners on this episode of WCG Talks Trials.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of WCG Talks Trials. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your preferred listening platform as we continue to explore different areas of the clinical research industry. As always, we encourage you to join in the conversation. Feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future topics you'd like to hear on the show by visiting us at wcgclinical.com/podcast. We're here to serve as a trusted resource as we work to improve lives and accelerate clinical research together.